40 greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
I've been chatting with our boxing guru, Namdi Moweta, about some of the latest developments in the fight game. During Thursday's show, Namdi took a look at the Manny Pacquiao-Jesse Vargas WBO welterweight title bout, which will take place November 5th in Las Vegas, Nevada. And 2 weeks after that, on November 19th, there will be a matchup of undefeated fighters in Las Vegas. American Andre Ward will go against the Russian Sergey Kovalev, with the WBA, WBO, and IBF light heavyweight titles at stake. I ask Namdi, how's the Ward-Kovalev fight shaping up?
The fight is not selling, Sonny, because the fight fans, after you pay to see Manny Pacquiao and Jesse Vargas November 5th, then you want to come back in and charge fight fans to see these two guys, Kovalev and Ward, which in the fight game we think is going to be a very boring fight. There's no money there for fight fans to pay. So tickets have not been really selling. The pay-per-view numbers will not add up. And it's going to be one boring fight we want to forget about for 2016.
Maybe it's a bid to boost those ticket sales, Namdi. But on the undercard of Ward Kovalev, Clarissa Shields, two-time Olympic champion from the United States, she's going to make her professional debut.
I want to turn pro because I feel like women's boxing need it. And I just want to help that drive that we have, you know, and I want to play a role in building our platform. It doesn't have a platform right now. There are a few big names, but as far as them being like on TV or pay-per-view, we don't have anything like that. So I think that with me and my two Olympic gold medals and my amateur background and my dominance that I can bring that to the sport.
Sonny, that's a big deal for boxing because the fight game has not really opened their arms to women in boxing. In the MMA, mixed martial art is a big deal when the girls fight. But in the fight game, the old school people, two women fighting, we just don't really, really care. Some guys will sit out this undercard and then wait for the main event and come into the arena for the main event. If I go to this fight, for the award fight, Sonny, I will not be in the arena watching two women fight because that's not my cup of tea. I have a daughter and I just don't, you know, the idea of two women fighting, Sonny, doesn't turn me on. It's a big turn off. So if I happen to be there for the fight, expect me to be in the lobby chilling and then after the fight, I come into the arena to watch the main fight. That's just me now. I know people are going to say, Namdi, hey, no, but two women fighting is not my thing, man.
Namdi, how about an update on African fighters for VOA boxing fans?
Sonny, if you remember that fight, Robert Easter against Richard Comey from Ghana, and it was a split decision, and it was live on TV, the whole world saw it, and we felt Richard Comey from Ghana got robbed. Guess what happened now? IBF said the eliminator between Richard Comey and Denis Shafikov must fight the champion, Robert Easter, not later than January 8, 2017, which is a big, big deal for African boxing.
Namdi, why didn't Comey just have a rematch with Easter?
Don't forget, Sonny, Comey has Al Haymon behind him. Do we need to say more, Sonny? Who is Al Haymon? He has all the money, Sonny. So for IBF to go against Al Haymon and say your fighter must fight the winner of this eliminator, it's rare because the most powerful man in boxing, you don't say no to him. So we are waiting to see what will happen after January 8th because Shafikov, a Russian, is a southpaw. He's a very, very good fighter. And his promoter, Warrior Boxing, just won the post bid this week, which means Denis Shafikov's promoter will put on this fight in Miami. The African will go again into the lion's den, fighting the fighter and his promoter and the referees and judges again. Hopefully, in the near future, where we can see African promoters come in and bid for these fights and take these fights to Africa, because I'm telling you, Sonny, the same thing will happen. Richard Comey must knock out Denis Shafikov to win this fight, because Shafikov has the money backing from Warrior Boxing in Florida.
Namdi, in your backyard in Los Angeles, promoters have announced a December 17th farewell fight for Bernard Hopkins. Let's hear from the main promoter, Oscar De La Hoya.
People are going to talk about Bernard Hopkins, not for his boxing, but for the legacy that he is leaving outside the ring.
Now we'll hear from the man himself, Bernard Hopkins.
Just pay attention and watch. December 17th, with a puncher, with a puncher. I run the punchers. I don't run from them. And so when a puncher punches, understand that only way he know he's hitting something is when he hits something. Let's see. Can the fox dismantle the puncher?
Namdi, what are your thoughts about Hopkins fighting again at the age of 51?
Sonny, he calls this the final one. A great fighter, Sonny. I mean, in the fight game, we will never forget the executioner, the alien, Bernard Hopkins. Look at the people he fought, Sonny. Antonio Tava, Kelly Pavlik, Winky Wright, Roy Jones, Jermaine Taylor. Go back and look at what he did to Oscar De La Hoya in that fight. A left hook to the body took Oscar De La Hoya's legs out. That was the end of the fight. This guy, I mean, the fight with Félix Trinidad from Puerto Rico, everybody thought he would get beat up by Félix Trinidad. He beat Félix Trinidad. Go back and look at the fight with Kelly Pavlik. This undefeated middleweight, he beat him up also. This guy was able to unify the titles in the light heavyweight and middleweight division. And nobody's ever done that. And the people are now trying to compare him with Marvin Hagler. Will he have been able to hang with Marvin Hagler? Oh, come on. You know, he will have to be, I don't know.
That would have been a great fight, Namdi.
Oh, Marvin Hagler. Marvelous Marvin Hagler was a beast in his days, Sonny.
and the similarity ahead. That they both had long reigns as champions, didn't they?
Disciplined guys. And I mean, he would come into the ring and read the fighter and throw you off your game and make you miss and make you look stupid. I mean, look at those fights where he pulled those upsets. I mean, everybody expected him to be really beat up, and he just came and just gave them a boxing lesson and won. We never seen him blooded with broken nose or broken jaw, because he had great defense and great chins on him.
Namdi, his opponent on December 17th, Joe Smith Jr., 22-1 with 18 knockouts. He doesn't sound like a pushover.
No, Sonny, that's what's really surprised us in the game. That's why I'm going to make sure I'll be ringside to see this. He's not fighting a bum. He's fighting a young puncher. So you ask, why go against a young puncher when you want to make this your last fight? You want to end with a fight whereby you go to the party after the fight, not with a broken jaw.
So in other words, you better be careful.
There may not be any party after the fight. You know, it's Hollywood, man. All the movie stars, sports stars, everybody there went to see him do his thing. But you're taking on a puncher. So that's why we go to this fight, hoping to see him pull his old tricks, all the old magic, and give this young star a boxing lesson. Would be the best way to close the book, man.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moweta. Now let's go to Germany, where the 35th edition of the Meinhova Frankfurt Marathon will be run on Sunday. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with one of the top Kenyans ahead of the race. Here's Andy.
Mark Correa is one of the leading contenders for the Mynova Frankfurt Marathon on Sunday. Mark's a man who's run 2:05:49 for the marathon, a very respectable time indeed, and he won Paris last year, that was 2015. But Mark, as a very good Kenyan runner, I'd like to ask you about the philosophy of training in a group that every elite Kenyan I meet or other journalists meet, they all train in groups, talking about Kapsabet, Iten, Eldoret. I presume you train in a group, but what does it feel like? Why is it important to you to be training so much in group with other runners?
Okay, thank you very much. You know, in Kenya, training alone, you can't achieve your goals, but training in a group is very important to train in a group in Kenya, because to train with a group, you gain a lot of experience. You know, maybe you can run with somebody like Wilson Gibson, Geoffrey Mutai, you know, and you will be able to achieve your goal there, because, you know, you will be happy because you are running with a world champion, world record holder.
I've also had the impression, maybe it applies especially to women runners in Kenya, you runners, you feel you need to go into a training camp to be away from the demands, the expectations of, you know, family, commitments, all the other things in life, really so that you can train, make training the priority. Is that fair to say?
I can say, you know, it's not all athletes who train in the camp. Some others are in their homes. It depends on how you arrange yourself.
Now, with runners of your quality, and of course anybody who's in a training group where you are has to be a very, very good runner, what happens on the days when you feel somebody is trying to push it? You know, it's an easy day. You perhaps agree that it's going to be an easy day by your standards, but somebody's pushing it, maybe a young gun, and there's more experienced men in that group. How do you cope with that?
I think, you know, in Kenya, these upcoming athletes, they are very strong, and we are training together. So sometimes, you know, when we go to the race, they don't achieve much, but when people like us, we know how to run very well in the road. So we have to tell them, you know, you have to take care of yourself, train with the guys who know how to train well, yeah.
So I presume someone like you with an established reputation, as I say, you won Paris last year, you've run 2:05, is it a case of, like, seniority? You're an elder, shall I say, of the group, so that you have a kind of authority. You can say, hey, today we're not running quick. Today is supposed to be easy, so slow down.
No, it's not like that. But, you know, it depends on how you have trained, how you have planned your race. You know, it's not a matter of you say, we go up with this pace, we go with this. You know, no, it's not that way.
And the flow of very good runners from Kenya doesn't seem to be slowing down. So is also there a feeling of pressure, you know, even for somebody like you, that you know that younger runners are coming in and you have to be very good to stay at that standard. Is there also that feeling of pressure when you're in the training camps?
Yeah, it's also a pressure because, you know, there is upcoming very strong athletes in Kenya now. You see, like, Amsterdam Marathon, you see a lot of Kenyans, they run very well there. So it's us now to maintain, train well, eat well, and relax. Yeah, and then that's how you'll achieve your goal.
Well, that's a simple formula, but not everybody can stick to it and indeed have that talent such as you. Mark Correa, Paris champion a year ago. All the best on Sunday for the Mynova Frankfurt Marathon. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Now let's go to China, where Japanese golfer Hideki Matsuyama has the lead after Friday's second round of the HSBC Champions Tournament in Shanghai. Matsuyama had the day's best score, a 65, to go 13 under par in blustery conditions. The 24-year-old Japanese golfer is three shots ahead of American Bill Haas and the defending champion Russell Knox from Scotland. Reporter Nick Dye tells us more from Shanghai.
Matsuyama's relishing a golfing purple patch at the moment. He won the Japan Open 2 weeks ago and finished second in Malaysia just last week. He's into the top 10 on the world rankings, having already won in Phoenix earlier this season. 19 birdies so far has helped to this position in a tournament in which he's never before prospered. Knox, of course, shone a year ago. He appears to be relishing his return, while Haas has enjoyed back-to-back rounds of 67. A 66 for Rory McIlroy means he's now joined the hunt on 7 under par, that after a modest start.
I feel like I actually hit the ball pretty similarly the first 2 days. I just held a few more putts today and was able to take advantage of some of the good drives that I was hitting. So, yeah, I mean, 66 in these conditions is pretty good out there. And looks like from the way the leaderboard is, I'm going to need a couple more scores like that to have any chance.
Cold and windy conditions saw the first round leader Rickard Karlberg fall away.
Thanks, Nick. Nick Dye reporting from Shanghai, China.
VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
And if you check out my Facebook page today, Friday, you'll see a nice photo of two-time Olympic champion boxer Claressa Shields of the USA, who we heard from earlier in the show. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Happy Friday and sporty greetings, Andrew.
Very happy Friday to you too, Sunny. Good to be here.
I know Nick Dye was talking about blustery conditions in Shanghai a little earlier. What about the windy city, Chicago? I guess that'll be, what can we say weather-wise? I know there's a big game there tonight.
I just love that transition from the bluster to the windy city. I love it. It's all eyes are on Chicago tonight, certainly in the baseball world, but in the sports world generally. It has been, and get ready for this. I couldn't believe this number, but this is absolutely true. It has been 25,950 days since a World Series game at Wrigley Field in Chicago, where the Cubs play. So the last time they played the World Series in 1945, it's been 25,950 days since, and even longer since they've won. It's been 108 years since they won, and it's coming to Chicago. So
incredible!
All eyes on Wrigley Field, all eyes on Wrigleyville. And we'll talk about Wrigleyville in a little bit, but let's stick in Wrigley Field for a second. According to StubHub.com, which is a ticket resale site here in the U.S., the cheapest seats you can get right now to get to the game tonight, $1,600.
Wow.
The cheapest.
Now, where does that put you at Wrigley?
Way up in the nosebleeds. You're practically outside the stadium. If you just want to get in, but just for standing room, it's about $1,750. You don't even get a seat for that much. You just get in to stand there. And then the highest price tickets, which I think are kind of a joke, somebody put up tickets, they're $996,000 each. And they're not even that good seats. But if you want to sit right next to the dugout where the players all sit and be right practically on the field, it's $30,000 a ticket. So a lot of money that's going to be spent for people to get into Wrigley Field tonight to see this first World Series game at Wrigley Field in 25,950 days. And if you pay that much money, you will get to see the Chicago Cubs and the Cleveland Indians face off, but you will also get to see Billy Williams throw the first pitch. Sweet swinging Billy Williams.
Great Cubs player from
absolutely
yesteryear.
Famous Cubs player, inducted in the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1987. As we've talked about on the show before, usually during these big playoff games, the teams bring out these amazing players that they've had in their past, these legends of the game for those teams. So Billy Williams will be making that first pitch. And if our listeners maybe don't know who Billy Williams is, that's maybe understandable if they're not following baseball, but they will know who's singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game during the seventh inning stretch, and that is Cubs mega fan, no surprise, Bill Murray. Bill Murray has been a Cubs, you know, Mr. Cubs, you know, fan for as long as I can remember. And as an actor and comedian, he has made his love of the Cubs very well known in just about everything he does. So no surprise that he will be there at the ballpark singing Take Me Out to the Ballgame.
I know one of his famous skits when he was on Saturday Night Live was that lounge singer. I wonder if he'll use that lounge singer persona.
You know, I don't know, but it's I think there's going to be a lot of social media videos of Bill Murray singing. I think this, you know, he maybe mingle with some of the fans. He's a very much a Chicago kind of hometown guy, so we'll see if he makes it out there. But not to fear, if you can't get into Wrigley, you can get into Wrigleyville, which is the area right around the stadium where there are all bars and places to watch the game. Now, some of these places, I couldn't believe this, some of these places are charging up to $250 just to get in the door.
Like a restaurant or bar?
Like a huge cover charge, like you're going to pay to get into a club or something, and $250 just to get in because so many people want to be in Wrigleyville for this. And this gentleman, Matt Lindner, tweeted this out on this morning. It says 7:45 a.m. in Wrigleyville. This is nuts. And he posts a picture, and this bar he's in is packed full at 7:45 in the morning.
Mm.
So the joke somebody made was, I can say, oh, I was at Wrigleyville to see the World Series, but I don't remember it because I was at the bar so long that I had too much and I passed out. So hopefully they don't drink too much and they can actually watch the game and remember it. But people are going to be there for the entire day. It is pretty much a city holiday in Chicago, I think, certainly in Wrigleyville.
Andrew, you mentioned Billy Williams, who will throw out the first pitch in Game 3. The series is tied 1-1 between the Cubs and the Indians. One of the younger Cubs players, Kyle Schwarber, I mentioned him earlier in the week. A quick update, he was the designated hitter in Game 2 for the Cubs, and they were hoping, now that we've gone to a National League ballpark, that they could put him in the outfield as one of the outfielders so he could hit. But the doctors say they don't think he can move as well as they would like, so he will be a pinch hitter in Game 3, should he get that opportunity.
So hopefully fans will get to see him, because he himself said, you know, I'm not too disappointed because it was kind of a stretch that I would be well enough. He really accelerated his recovery schedule, and just to make it to the World Series and play as that designated hitter in the first two games was a huge accomplishment. So hopefully the fans will get to see him. They'll put him in at some point. We'll see.
What else is trending with the World Series, Andrew?
Well, in the world of baseball, we talk about Billy Williams and another great of the game, Ken Griffey Jr., and he has gotten a great
honor. Another great
hitter. Great hitter, and he's gotten a great honor this year. He's going to be on the cover of MLB The Show 17, which is the big baseball video game. Now, this is an unusual choice, because usually on the cover of MLB The Show, they put a young player or a current player. So I think this is the first person they put on that's been a retired player. So a lot of people wondering why they did that. A lot of people saying they should have put Jose Fernandez on, of course, the Miami Marlins pitcher who was killed in that boating accident earlier this year. So a lot of debate about that, but still a great of the game and a great honor for him. And finally, here in D.C., we have a baseball story. Max Scherzer, the pitcher for the Washington Nationals, of course, threw a no-hitter earlier in the season, and his wife almost threw away the jersey he wore.
Oh, no.
During the no-hitter. He tweeted out, the wife was cleaning up the house and threw away a dirty jersey. It was my second no-hitter jersey. Then he tweeted out a picture with a bunch of her purses in the garbage and said, oh, well, I found some dirty purses lying around the house. I guess I'll throw these away. But his wife, Erica, responded. She said, thank you all for your concern, but the jersey is safe, and I'm pretty sure I'll never throw anything away again. Hashtag future hoarder. And people couldn't believe that she was going to throw away this jersey, but also couldn't believe Max Scherzer must have so many jerseys that it's pretty commonplace to just throw them away. A lot of people saying, how many must you have that you can chuck some of them in the garbage? I guess when you're a baseball player, you have no lack of jerseys and baseball gear.
I've also heard that Max could be doing his own laundry from now on, Andrew.
That's very true. Maybe he should keep an eye on his own laundry, absolutely.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Have a good weekend, Andrew.
Thanks so much. You too.
And that wraps up the October 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Trafficking in persons, also known as human trafficking or modern-day slavery, is a crime involving the exploitation of someone for the purposes of compelled labor or a commercial sex act through the use of force, fraud, or coercion. Human trafficking is a global problem, and no country is immune, not even the United States. The notion of modern-day slavery is one that touches everybody's conscience, and it is one of fundamental basic human decency, said Secretary of State John Kerry. The fight against human trafficking is about far more than merely doing the right thing, he said. Trafficking in persons is an assault on human rights, and it's a threat to global stability. It undermines the rule of law, it breeds corruption, it spreads disease, it widens the gap between the haves and the have-nots, and it tears whole families apart. So it's counter to every single thing that we're trying to accomplish in the field of development and everything that we would like to see in our communities and in communities elsewhere in the world as we try to live up to the 2030 development goals. Following President Obama's March 2012 call to strengthen federal efforts to combat human trafficking, the President's Interagency Task Force to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons has convened leaders from government, the private sector, advocates, survivors, communities of faith, civil society, law enforcement, and academia to implement a coordinated agenda that prevents trafficking, protects victims, and prosecutes offenders. There is nothing inevitable about trafficking in human beings. That conviction is where the process of change really begins, with the realization that just because a certain abuse has taken place in the past doesn't mean that we have to tolerate that abuse in the future or that we can afford to avert our eyes, wrote Secretary of State Kerry in the introduction to this year's Trafficking in Persons report, which was issued in June. Ending modern slavery isn't just a fight we should attempt. It is a fight we can and must win. While more work is required to tackle the root causes and consequences of human trafficking, the United States continues to be a leader in the global movement to end modern-day slavery. By working together, sharing information, and partnering with a broad range of organizations, the U.S. government continues to explore new and innovative approaches to end the plight of trafficking victims.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
On November 8th, American citizens will exercise their right to vote and choose their next president. VOA is providing comprehensive coverage of this unique democratic process. Who is going to earn the trust of the American people to lead the nation for the next 4 years? Find out right here on VOA.